Hello and welcome to Against the Law, the myth-busting ancient history podcast that aims to separate fact from fiction in the ancient world. In this series, we've been checking off popular forms of media that encompass reception of the ancient world, and today is no different. I'm once again putting on the hob for some popcorn because today we're going to be turning the channel onto TV dramas. Each podcast person will be offering me an insight into their most notable TV dramas, and I'll be choosing which has made it to my must-watch list. The cast for tonight's episode is reassuringly familiar. We have Starlet Xenia, who is roaming the red carpet, because she's going to be talking about ancient Rome. We've got famed hero Meg, who can probably tell you the origin of the word thespian, since that's got its roots in ancient Greece. And of course, we have our trooper Barney, who is here to cover the ancient Near East and beyond. It's been a tricky series for Barney, as we've discussed. Not many people are clamouring to recreate stories from the ancient Near East. And finally, in last place on the billing, it's me, Flo. I'm a bit of a ham, really. I don't know much about the ancient world, but I'm ready to improvise my way into reception in TV dramas with you, dear listener. So, we've had the movies. Let's get groovy and go to the TV drama world now, because I've literally only just got a TV license after about a decade of not having one, which is very exciting, and I'm catching up on all sorts. I'm very excited to get stuck into some dramas. Now, Xenia, I'm going to pick on you first. Have you got any drama pitches to provide to me for my delectation?
I do. So I'm going to start with a series that was on ITV, I believe. It was called Plebs.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of it and I love it. Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. It's so funny. And I just think they kind of capture the like grotty side of ancient Rome really well. So we were talking last time about Gladiator and how that kind of captures the essence of, I think I said, the glory and the cruelty of Rome or something like that. You know, there's kind of two sides of the coin of the empire. But this really captures just like the everyday muck that you would experience being someone not quite at the bottom of the pile of Roman society, but like pretty far towards the bottom of the pile. So it's a group of like teenage boys and they're kind of wandering around Rome. It's very silly. The stories that they do are very, very silly. And actually what's quite funny and almost like an in-joke for classicists watching it is that they use a lot of the same character names from the Cambridge Latin course series that I think we spoke about before with Caroline, this kind of major Latin series that almost everyone does at school. They call one of the characters Grumio, and that's the same as in the Cambridge Latin course book. So that's quite funny.
That would have gone over my head when I watched it. But is plebs short for plebeian or plebeian?
That's right. Yeah. And again, you know how last time we were talking about sort of bridging that gap between modern understanding and ancient understanding?
Mm.
So a pleb in Roman society is actually kind of a political class.
Oh.
They're kind of used in different voting systems. So it's not the same as what we come to understand it today as like just an ordinary person. It was actually a very specific voting class of person. And what you're really talking about, the characters in it are really just kind of free but poor young men in Rome, but pleb is actually quite a specific term. So again, that's, they use the term and we all know what we think we all know what they mean by it, and that meaning, that modern meaning, is enough for us to understand the setting of the Roman of the like series, funny series set in ancient Rome, but it doesn't actually have an accurate correlation to what these people would have been in the Roman Empire. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I will say that I really, really enjoyed Plebs. It got me kind of, because part of the thing that I really enjoy about Against the Law is when I learn about just the average person, which is quite tricky, like we discussed, because things that are written down and things that are recorded are normally about royalty or important people or mythological figures rather than the average Joe or Josephine. So I really like when popular culture reflects the just typical life in the ancient world. That's really nice. So that pitch was really easily successful, Xenia, because I already say yes to that.
Yay.
Would you say that plebs were sort of like in-betweeners in ancient Rome?
Yes, absolutely. I didn't watch the in-betweeners, but the clips that I've seen, yeah, it's absolutely right. It's the setting is just like another vehicle through which to do that kind of same old classic series about teenagers getting up to no good, basically. But it's good fun. And they get it kind of right. Like, do you remember a few episodes ago we talked about the way news was disseminated in ancient Rome with the Acta Diurna? I think that was what in one of our cool quiz formats at the end of a series.
It was. Can I try and remember? Is it a big stone or metal slab that's erected to tell you the news in the sort of town square?
It would have been paper or papyrus, actually. So they just put it up.
Earliest newspaper, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I think there's an episode where they go around and they like get the news off that. So again, the little things, little details that are really fun for people who are like, oh, I know about that. That's really cool. And for people who, you know, haven't studied classics, it's like, oh, actually, you know, you kind of learn by absorption, right? If the setup of the story is the Acta Diurna, you kind of find out almost subconsciously about this aspect of the Roman Empire, about this aspect of news sharing. But actually, it's not the whole point of the story, right? It's not like an educational thing. It's just like, oh, this is cool. I'm enjoying it for the shenanigans.
The best kind of learning is when you don't know you're learning. That's the most fun way, I think. Okay, that's fantastic. I love that. I love that that pitch, because I'm really biased. So yeah, that's definitely one to rewatch from me at the very least. Meg, I'm going to go to you next. What have you brought to pitch to me today?
Hello. I've got several, so I don't know which one is my sort of absolute final pitch. I'm going to first start with a shout out to Troy, Fall of a City, which I think I mentioned in films. I had mixed feelings about it. This was basically an adaptation of the Iliad. So I did obviously watch it because I'm a devotee of Homer's Iliad.
You're an Illy head.
I'm an Illy head. Yes, I'm a big Homer head. Guilty as charged.
A homo, if you will.
Oh, a homosexual. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, love him. Love his work. Big fan. Maybe cut that.
Please don't.
Just me.
The fandom is called. The fandom is called the homosexuals.
You're laughing at Agamemnon there, Flo.
I am a little bit, aren't I? I'm happy to hear a clip. I'm proper wheezing. That's good stuff.
What was I saying? Oh, yeah, Troy, Fall of a City. So it's adaptation of the Iliad. And it was on BBC One, Two, possibly. And it was quite good. It was really controversial because for Achilles and Patroclus, they cast black actors, which is obviously ridiculous that there was any controversy about that. But I think that got it, that generated, it was possibly one of those things where it's like, obviously, absolutely shouldn't have happened in the first place. And it's appalling that those actors experienced racism just for being cast in a series about Greece. But I do think it also sort of generated some like news articles about it, which meant that I think a surprising number of people watched Troy, Fall of the City, which is possibly, you know, could turn out to be a good thing in the end. So yeah, interesting stuff. It was, I mentioned it last week, the thing I didn't like about it was the way they do the gods. And I said last week, one thing I like about the film Troy with Brad Pitt is that they basically just give up on the idea. The gods aren't really there at all. I think they sort of mention them, but they're not like on screen. And I think that was absolutely the right call for Troy, the film. Troy, Fall of a City, the TV series, they try and do it and it just doesn't work. And I just think maybe you just, it's always going to look silly. It's always going to look sort of, you know, you're never going to actually be able to capture that on screen because they're this sort of, you know, this pantheon of Greek gods and they're so powerful, you know. So that's something I didn't love about it. But very well acted, very beautifully shot, good stuff. That's kind of my like technical pitch. It's about the Iliad. I'm a big fan. Done. My actual pitch, I think, is Atlantis, which was objectively worse. Atlantis was the, do you guys remember BBC Merlin?
Yes, I was a huge fan.
It was the same guys that made BBC Merlin. I was just absolutely obsessed with that in 2008. So as soon as they were, you know, they were like, okay, Merlin's over, the guy's dead. And they just went on to Atlantis, and it's incredibly similar, quite sort of campy. And it was had the most ridiculous plot about like he starts off in the modern day and goes, he's in like a submarine. I'm actually now just realizing I definitely should have rewatched the first episode because I haven't seen it in a while. But it's Jason. His name's Jason, and he starts off in the modern day and then is like in a submarine. And I think he's looking for, it's kind of like, do you remember the Titanic sub? It was sort of like that sort of situation. Oh, yeah. He's in like a solo submarine investigating something at the bottom of the ocean. Can't remember what. And then he is sort of like something explodes or whatever, and he wakes up in Atlantis, which against the law does not exist, never did exist. They didn't even think it existed in the ancient world.
This is big news. This is
huge,
big news.
Against the law. One of the biggest. It's just Plato, just it's like in an allegory. It's like if you went made a documentary about trying to find Plato's cave. It's obviously not a real cave.
Oh, is it like saying, oh, and then we all went to Utopia and someone goes, where is this land of Utopia?
Exactly. It's an island in a sort of story within an allegory. It's not meant to be a real geographical place, even in Plato. And Plato is our only source for it. Not a reliable man.
Guy was crazy,
exactly.
Meg, it's a bit problematic of you, obviously, to suggest that Plato's cave is not real when that's an allegory about reality itself. I think you're causing all sort of ontological waves here.
The deep cut of Plato's cave is that it's not a real cave, guys.
The shadows aren't real. The people aren't real.
It is, in fact, a story. Wow. Yeah. So, and then he sort of wakes up in Atlantis and starts having a life in Atlantis. And I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was very silly. It got cancelled after only 2 series, I think, which is a shame. But it wasn't very good, so.
I don't know. It sounds like Xenia likes it.
I do, yeah. I really enjoyed Atlantis. Again, but for the same reasons as Meg. It's just a fun story, and they have something like Medea. Medusa pops up at one point, and then they have to go and find the Erymanthian boar or something similar. So, like, there are these kind of themes that pop up from mythology, but they're very loosely connected. It's like, whereas, like, real Greek mythology, I say real, they are just myths. But the kind of Greek mythological tradition, all the stories are connected. Whereas with this one, it's kind of like, okay, we'll take this element from this story and this element from that story, and that's going to be the basis for a completely made up episode that's just very fun and involves having like two of the main characters take their shirts off as much as possible.
Cool. That's fun. I mean, it's fun.
Coincidentally, my pitch today also involves a lot of shirts off. But I suspect to a much more extreme extent than a pre-Watershed BBC TV drama.
Oh, pray tell.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So this is the Spartacus series from the US, which was broadcast on a channel that they have over there called Stars. I actually can't remember if it ever got aired in the UK legally. I certainly watched it on the high seas, shall we say, when I was at school. I think it's probably one of those ones that was acquired by Sky or something like that, if people's families had Sky when they were growing up. But yeah, I think I watched this one online. And Spartacus, the first series is called Spartacus Blood and Sand, was so graphic that each episode is preceded with a warning that whilst it does attempt to... and an historical portrayal of ancient Rome, it contains graphic violence and adult content.
That's really funny, because as if the stories from the ancient world aren't already sort of sexual content 18 plus anyway.
Yeah, to be honest, you're right. But yeah, this show was pretty irreverent. And I was having a little look on Wikipedia, so I watched this as a teenager. And I think really enjoyed it. It was the height of my Latin learning. I think a lot of the people in my class would watch it as well, and we'd all then come and regroup, talk about our favourite gladiators in the show. But yeah, I've had a look on Wikipedia, and it was pretty poorly received, sort of in the 50% sort of range of reception. So anyway, it's about Spartacus, the story of Spartacus, the famous revolting Roman slave. Not revolting in the hygiene sense, revolting in the uprising sense. But the story, which is set in the Ludus, or the gladiator school, where Spartacus is trained as a gladiator, is essentially a vehicle for melodrama between gladiators and their sort of spouses, wives, girlfriends, to the extent that they could have those. And then lots of violence when they're fighting in the arena. So there is some level of historicity to it, in the sense that the characters who appear in the show, a lot of those are sort of real people from the slave revolt that Spartacus was involved in, like Crixus, who is another famous name. But yes, it's a pretty good show. I found as a teenager, I suspect it wouldn't stand up today. But yeah, there's quite a lot of sex, nudity, and violence, which may have disposed 15-year-old Barney to it.
Men with their shirts off, that's always a pull, isn't it?
Yes, and these guys are ripped. It very much in the sort of the 300 school of costume design, rather than, well, to be honest, actually in Troy that we were talking about last time, Brad Pitt is looking pretty fire as well. But Xenia, if you say that the people in Atlantis were sexy, I will believe you.
They were like soft sexy. This sounds, Spartacus sounds pretty like
steamy sexy.
I, having watched Spartacus as a teenager, was so inspired by the lewd content that I decided to make a meme about it. Would you like to?
Ooh.
Would you like to hear that, the format of that meme?
Immediately.
Obviously, because, you know, memes famously a visual medium, so I'm going to completely ruin it by trying to pitch it to you over audio streams alone. But it was a meme that I shared with my class, with my Latin class at school. So possibly a little nerdy. But, and I'll have to check this with Xenia as we go, am I right in thinking that the verb I want in Latin is volo?
Indeed.
And to not want is
nolo.
Yeah. So what I did was I put the word volo and then a picture of Caecilius. And then I put the word nolo and a picture of Caecilius. And then I put YOLO and had a picture of a sex scene from Spartacus.
Right.
Good grief. Crikey. That's 9-gag worthy, Barney.
I'm sure it did go on 9-gag.
Yeah.
Got a lot of Tumblr notes.
Oh, good grief. That's wowzers. We're in the presence of an internet star.
Anyway, Spartacus Blood and Sand was the first series. Then there was a little mini-series that was a sort of a prequel. I think the most famous face in Spartacus was John Hannah.
Oh.
From Four Weddings and a Funeral.
And The Mummy.
And The Mummy, yes, which I didn't mention last week, actually, which I probably could have done, but I went for Prince of Egypt and Gods of Egypt instead. Yes, John Hannah of Mummy fame is the Lannister, the person who runs the gladiator school. And actually, it's got Lucy Lawless as well, who was most famous for playing Xena, warrior princess.
That's a badass name, isn't it? Lucy Lawless. That's such a cool name.
Yeah, although her middle name is Francis, which is less cool.
Yeah, isn't cool.
So yeah, that's Spartacus for you. I'm not sure I've sold it. I think I may have taken the wind out of the sails of my own pitch, in fact, by suggesting it hasn't aged well.
Okay. Well, I don't know what I was going to say.
You're speechless thinking about Spartacus's abs.
Do you know what? I'm so old and boring that abs don't really do it for me.
What about buttocks?
Yeah, buttocks are good. Yeah, I'll watch for buttocks.
Okay. It's got it. It's got buttocks.
Well, I'm right there immediately. It's downloading now.
Obviously, eagle-eared listeners will probably realise that, once again, I haven't brought an ancient Near Eastern set piece of media to the table. This is because I don't believe that there are any particularly prominent TV dramas set in ancient Egypt or in ancient Mesopotamia. I did have a look just to make sure that I wasn't being neglectful or that I hadn't just had my head buried in the cultural sand, but no. I've not seen any, and I couldn't find any, you know, any ones that more than perhaps a few thousand people would have watched. There was, and one I've certainly watched clips of this over the years, but I don't think I ever saw a full episode. There was a Bible miniseries in 2013 that was an attempt to do a sort of an epic adaptation of a number of key moments from I think it's just the Old Testament, insofar as we sometimes argue that that's part of the ancient Near Eastern milieu that I look at. That might count, but I haven't seen it, so I can't pitch it. But if anyone wants to go and watch The Bible, it's called, 2013.
Imaginative.
Yeah. Well, what do you think they could make it like, you know, like the blood and sand of Spartacus?
Bible 2.
The New Testament.
What would be the little epithet?
Bible 2.
Judgment Day.
Judgment Day. Nice.
That's good.
So what you're saying, Barney, is we're crying out for a series like the ancient Near EastEnders.
Oh my gosh, that would be so good. Was the Bible a History Channel one?
Yes, that's right.
So I worked on kind of the sequel to that, which was New Testament only. and well, it was the Gospels only, actually. But it was such a success for them that a few years later, they decided to do a series called, when we were working on it, it was called I Knew Jesus. And the idea was it was 8 episodes and each one was done from the perspective of someone who knew Jesus, which I think was a really great premise. But the History Channel changed it at the last minute and they decided to just call it Jesus, His Life.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is quite interesting, actually.
It was quite good, actually. I was pretty proud of that.
Yeah, it's a nice way of breaking it up.
Yeah. It was interesting to see which episodes were the hardest to do from a storytelling point of view. Like, Peter was so easy because he has such a brilliant story arc, but John the Baptist was really boring.
Aww.
Bless him.
Okay, Meg, I'm going to come to you for a pitch now, because while I'm in a huff about Barney not finding my joke funny. Meg, give me another pitch. You can do it.
So, can I pitch you something that doesn't currently exist, much like Atlantis, the island?
Yes.
So this is like a tradition, this is a real pitch. Imagine you are, you know, the board of trustees at the BBC or whatever, and I'm coming to pitch you, I think, and this is my idea, trademark Meg, that there should be a sort of Glee-style series about the city Dionysia, which is the big sort of, it's a religious festival, but it's also a drama festival, basically, like the Edinburgh Fringe or whatever, in Athens. And I just think it's the perfect arena, if you will, for a sitcom, because there'd be like the actors, the playwrights, and the kind of drama of it. So I'm imagining like in Glee, there's sort of like the run up, the rehearsals, the love interest, the love triangles. But then you'd also, it's like High School Musical. You've got the kind of, it's like a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like a thing within a thing. Like High School Musical, the musical.
I get you. So it's like capturing the process of making a play, and then we see the play as well.
And then we see the play, exactly. And I mean, I reckon someone's going to write in and be like, that does exist. But I just think, because it's basically the city Dionysia is this massive festival. It's where if you've got a Greek playwright in your head right now, they probably like debuted their work at the city Dionysia. It's a massive, massive festival. There's also another one, the rural Dionysia, and their festival is for Dionysus, but they're also where all this drama takes place. And I just think it would be, the literal drama of it could be incredible. And that's my pitch, and I hope you fund it.
I will, with all of my 12p that I have remaining at the end of the week. Do you, oh no, wait, I'm a BBC board member, aren't I? Oh, I'll do it with all of the £12 million that I have.
Great.
Meg, I'll ask you the question that a lot of channels might ask when you're pitching them an idea, which is, why now?
Great question, Barney. Why now? I think in the age of TikTok and YouTube Shorts.
Said like a true boomer.
Thank you. We need to go back to what you could argue is the original form of entertainment. So, in fact, the answer is not now. The answer is then.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah, that was on the spot. I didn't prepare that.
One question I would like to ask you, is it going to be mega gay? Because you mentioned love interests.
Oh, it's going to be... Yeah, well, there weren't any female actors, Flo, so it's...
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking about, yeah. And, you know, in this world of TikTok Shorts and homosexuality, it is very... That is very timely, actually, I would say.
Yeah, there's never a bad time.
Okay, so it's going to be quite gay. That's good. I also quite liked that your other pitch would have naffed off racists, and this pitch would naff off homophobes. So I'm sensing like a theme of irritating people who deserve it.
Guys, I've just realised, if we're pitching new ideas, I could pitch Gilgamesh.
Ooh, as a TV series.
Oh. All these years we've been joking about Gilgamesh being the sort of the bro road trip between Gilgamesh and Enkidu. But the standard version of the Epic of Gilgamesh has 12 books, which makes it a perfect mini-series.
Barney, oh my actually God. Have to confess something. I'm already in talks with Pedro Pascal for Enkidu.
I thought Anne Hathaway was Enkidu.
Anne's busy. She's in an NDA, so I can't say why. But she's already, aren't she got a clash, timetable clash.
Sure.
Pedro Pascal is Enkidu, in my mind. And then Gilgamesh. Do we have any ideas for Gilgamesh?
Worst casting, Gilgamesh.
Brad Pitt.
Chris Pratt as
Chris
Gilgamesh.
Pratt.
Timothy Chalamet as Enkidu. Oh, no.
Willem Johnny Dafoe.
Johnny Depp. Willem Dafoe is not worst timeline.
After I watched The Lighthouse, and I never want to see Willem Dafoe again in my whole life.
Who's the harlot? Who's playing the harlot?
Zendaya.
Anne Hathaway, that's why she's busy already.
I like Zendaya, that's great. Florence Pugh seems to be having a bit of a moment at the moment.
Well, then Timothy Chalamet's got to get involved if Florence Pugh is in it.
100%. Harry Styles as Gilgamesh.
Oh, no.
He's got to have hair to play that character, though, hasn't he?
Harry Styles as Humbaba, the giant guardian of the cedar forests.
Yeah.
Wait for him to get that call from his agent. That is... They really loved you, Harry, but they want you for Humbaba.
I think Dave... Dave Bautista would have to be Humbaba.
Yeah, that's good.
I'd basically just recasting Dune as Gilgamesh.
I mean, is there any... No, it's not. There's not really any links there. Well, no. It is more... I think Dune is kind of... It's more like classical, like we were talking about before. House Atreides.
Atreides.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad we managed to get a pitch for a 12-part Epic of Gilgamesh miniseries in.
I'm sold. That is actually the one I'm voting for.
Ditto. You know that I'm already on board. I think I've probably got about 70% of the writing credits already. Anyway, Senya, have you got any more pitches for me?
Yes, I do. So this is completely on the other side, like the other end from Plebs on the kind of TV drama scale. This was not ITV. This was HBO in partnership with the BBC. And they did an epic Rome series. In fact, it was two series. And it was absolutely phenomenal. Like, it's really nice to see a proper drama done with a proper budget. And this had plenty of budget. So they tried to do both the kind of ugly side of Rome and the powerful side of Rome during the kind of turn of the Republic that we come across again and again as like a favorite period of Roman history for dramatization. So you have, and the casting is absolutely phenomenal. Again, a bit like Spartacus, there's quite a lot of nudity, a fair bit of violence, probably not as much as Spartacus, but also quite a lot of sex as well. And they get it so right. It's amazing. I really love it. So that it follows the story of two Roman soldiers and how their stories occasionally cross paths with some of Rome's most powerful. So like at one point there's a really weird overlap where for some reason they're in Egypt and they're supposed to be part of like a delegation to Cleopatra, and Cleopatra realizes she's ovulating and she really really needs to get pregnant and claim it Caesar's, but Caesar isn't around and she's like, it has to be tonight. And so one of the Roman soldiers who's the main character just kind of has sex with her. So like Caesarion is apparently Titus Pullo's son instead of Caesar's.
Huge if true.
So it's kind of mad like that, but it's also kind of amazing. I really loved it.
So it's sort of like very, very nitty gritty, kind of dark. It might be something to watch later on in the evening. Like you watch Plebs at about 6 p.m.
and yes, then
8 p.m. you switch to Rome.
Absolutely. In fact that is what I would do. I would watch it on a Friday night at 8 p.m. with like the majority of a bottle of wine, and it was like my best Friday night.
That sounds incredible, actually.
So an ideal evening's viewing would probably be a bit of Atlantis, which is quite PG-13. Then maybe a bit of Plebs, you know, the kids are still up, but there's some naughty jokes, but it's quite funny and accessible. Then we go to Rome, maybe, and then late night we're going to Spartacus.
Yeah, what an evening.
That's the official ATL billing.
Yeah, Rome sounds great, Xenia. I never watched it because I think it was an 18 and it came out quite early, didn't it, in like HBO's kind of cycle as a producer of big landmark series, and I don't think I was ever allowed to watch it.
Did you observe age ratings?
At the age of like 11, I think, yes.
Pussyhole. It does sound very racy and very exciting. Will it put me off my popcorn?
It might put you on to something else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Spartacus.
Yeah.
HBO's Rome was not horny enough. What can I watch now?
So what I'm gathering from this entire episode is that classicists are kind of quite horny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, all right.
That sounded very guilty, Xenia.
Before we go and have a cold shower, separately, I want us to think of our favourite pitch from today, please, and get your minds out of the gutter. So I'm going to give you a second to think, and then I think I'm going to start with you, Barney, because poor Barney has not had a huge amount of representation from the ancient Near East, so I think you get first dibs. What was your favourite pitch from today?
So I think that, actually, I'll probably just pick the last one there and go with Rome. Obviously, I didn't watch it when it first came out, and then I didn't catch it as a teenager because I had other things to be watching, as I've made apparent. But I think because I was more of a Robin Hood guy than I was a Merlin guy. I think I always thought Merlin was quite lame. And so anything that is Merlin adjacent, I'm not super interested in. So sorry, Atlantis.
Brutal.
I'm going to go with Rome instead.
I'll stand for the Atlantis slander. I will not stand for the BBC Merlin slander. It was so good.
Well, since Xenia was suggesting Rome, I'm going to go to you now, Xenia. What's your favourite pitch from today?
So I would... I didn't make it through the first episode of the BBC Troy Ford of a City, but I think given Meg's pitch and sort of well-rounded summary, I'm going to try and give it another go. But of course, my vote would actually be for the Gilgamesh miniseries.
Of course, evidently. You've got to back our own pitch, really, haven't you? Meg, I'm going to go to you next. What was your favourite pitch from today?
Yeah, Gilgamesh miniseries, any day of the week. Am I allowed to have that as well? Because I think that's... I'm immediately giving up on my own pitch for the City Dionysia Glee series. And I'm switching ships, jumping ships immediately to Gilgamesh the 12-parter. I think it'd be stunning.
Yeah, I'm going to allow that because I'm also going to go for the Gilgamesh pitch because if I didn't, then I would be a hypocrite because I know that it's going to be the best series that has ever existed. And there's a gap in the market, frankly. Sod ancient Near EastEnders, bring in the Gilgamesh series. That's what I say. So that was TV dramas, and that's given me quite a lot. Radio Times full of things to go and watch. I think I'm going to start with Plebs. And then sit and gaze at the TV while it's turned off and imagine the epic of Gilgamesh. And also, I did really like your pitch, Meg, and I'm sorry that it's not being made yet, but we need to watch that space. That was Against the Law, and you can catch us next time for a jam-packed episode of Pitches about ancient reception in modern popular culture. Ta-ra! If you've enjoyed today's episode, you can always choose to support us on Patreon.
We've got all sorts of tiers for every budget, starting from just £3 a month. Benefits include getting each episode a day early, stickers, and your name in cuneiform.
You can find us on Twitter at Against Law, and you can also find us on TikTok at Against the Law Podcast.
We're also always happy to hear suggestions, questions about the podcast and other requests. If you want to email us, our email is againstthelawpodcast@gmail.com.